talk about tobacco control and the AMA, but actually organized medicine's efforts to control the death and disease and disability caused by tobacco use, the number one preventable cause of death in the United States, and fastly becoming so, I believe, around the world. I have been in tobacco control policy for over 20 years. I started when I was 10. Polite laughter. Tobacco and medicine, or tobacco and physicians, has actually had a checkered past. And by that, I don't mean that the AMA has had a checkered past with tobacco, but just that the tobacco industry has sort of adopted some of our language to advance itself. So in my brief presentation, I'm going to talk about the tobacco industry and health, look at some of the AMA tobacco control policies starting in the early 60s, going on to some of the physician involvement work that we've done locally and here on the Hill, and then Melissa's going to talk about a collaborative that we have with our AMA Alliance, and she'll explain who that is, thanks to a work we're doing with the American Legacy Foundation. So let's look at this. Of course, I apologize for some of the fuzziness. I couldn't get quite clean ones, but at least we certainly can see the headlines. More doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette, and then they go on to quantify it with some numbers for Lucky's, saying, you know, it's less irritating and it's toasted. That it's odd that the small print on this one right here on the Lucky's, I can't quite read it, but basically it's saying that the figures were audited and certified by some agency, which I guess if I go back in the tobacco documents, we'll find out that these are tobacco industry certifiers. But from the 1920s to the 1950s, many tobacco manufacturers did use the images of medical professionals in their to make implied endorsements and to help them sell products. And tobacco companies even advertised, shock of all shocks, in the New England Journal of Medicine and the Journal of the American Medical Association, of which we do not control editorial content. The JAMA is separate from the governance of the AMA, and I'm required to say that by my lawyer sitting here in the front row. So a 1949 ad boasted authentic studies, scientific studies, that Philip Morris's cigarettes were less irritating, because obviously we know why, because they're toasted. This one I love, but I think it shows sort of the smartness, if that's a word, of the tobacco companies. They really did have the best that money could buy. That tobacco companies paid tribute to medical pioneers, and so in The Lady with a Lamp, they even talk about female physicians, and they talk about Clara Barton and sort of the early women pioneers. And this was, I think, an ad from the early 50s or late 40s, so clearly they were looking at niche market and getting ready to target women in their with their cigarettes. There's one that says, I'd reach for a Lucky instead of a Sweet. So they certainly looking at health claims, but also looking at women physicians, I thought was brilliant. Nowhere in the ad does it say who conducted the surveys. And when I was doing some reading last night, I found that the cigarette companies would descend on medical conventions, and they'd have a booth, and they'd pass out free cigarettes. And then they do exit polling and saying, what cigarettes do you have in your pocket? And that's how they would come up with their statistics and the taglines such as more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarettes was the result. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But let's jump ahead that the landmark 1964 report. Is there anybody who's not familiar with the first report on tobacco from 1964? That this was this was put out by the Advisory Committee to the Surgeon General. This report showed a link between cigarette smoking and disease and called for remedial actions. That at this, the first national anti-smoking coalition formed at this time, and insurance companies began looking at offering discounts. And at this time, too, actually the AMA was ahead of the curve. That what I think Dr. Havas explained that we do have a House of Delegates that pass resolutions and then adopt policies, and that's how we set our advocacy agenda. And so the AMA policies in the 60s, we certainly started out with education programs that everybody would expect of physicians being out in the community and talking about health issues. The 64 report, actually, medical community and the AMA knew that this report was coming out, so they jumped on the bandwagon too early. So I like to say we were the pioneers, that we adopted resolutions on this issue about recognizing the effects of tobacco on health, but the Surgeon General's report wasn't out yet, so we had to reaffirm. And I will tell you, if you ever look at our policy finder, we do have our policies listed in certain parts on the AMA website, and we reaffirm a lot. So I guess it means we're brilliant or redundant. I'm not sure. But so then we move ahead to the 60s, and this was remarkable. I mean, when I started doing my research on this, that in 1968 urges our members to stop smoking. At this point, 67% of all physicians smoked. It's actually now down to 4%. So they quickly were quitting when they got the first report. They were not physicians at that time, didn't necessarily have the tools equipped to help their patients. But the AMA signed this, and then we went after Congress in the 69, and this was a very enlightened position at that time to say, how can we, because I think we heard it a lot probably in the early 70s, how can the country promote cigarettes while telling people to quit? And I think there's been some of that discussion still going on today that's saying, why don't you just, outlaw it? So if we look at some of the tobacco-associated policies, and I really want to, again, point out that we were sort of at the forefront in 1992. Everybody is familiar with, right now we're looking at FDA regulation of tobacco. Tobacco products are not regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. Part of it because, is it a food, is it a drug? We think it's a drug, it contains nicotine. And Kessler, who was the commissioner, David Kessler was the commissioner of the FDA, he saw that as well. And the AMA met with Dr. Kessler and started looking at, and we adopted policy that called for the banning of all advertising, especially those targeted, advertising targeted at children. And we saw some of those regulations that he put out for the FDA, but Congress said he did not have the authority, and those were rolled back. Just to look, so as we look at the 90s, and this is just to give you an idea that many of the major medical peer-reviewed journals were doing whole issues about the tobacco. Every major medical publication addressed it. JAMA, the American Journal of Public Health Administration, devoted full issues to this as well. So let's look at leadership in action. That smoke-free policies dominated with six policies that we adopted from 2001 to the present. And I am proud to say that last June, the AMA took a major stance against the tobacco companies and called on its members to not use tobacco industry materials when they educate their patients. We do know that Philip Morris especially has the best materials that money can buy. And some physicians, we found, were having them in their offices. So we did pass this policy, and we're going to undertake a campaign to educate them not only why they shouldn't use tobacco industry materials, but what other resources are available to them. So for those of you who aren't physicians and you work with physicians, please remind them that there are other materials out there, such as from the American Lung Association, American Legacy Foundation, American Cancer Society, and the Centers for Disease Control has a great tobacco website, as well as if you are physicians. Another area that we're looking at is magazines in physicians' offices, and many physicians are getting rid of ads that have tobacco ads in them. So if we look at why are physicians such good advocates, obviously they have credibility. The legislators find them more acceptable. We're science-based, and we're the protectors of health, and we have a good grassroots ability. The AMA does have a patient action network. For those of you who aren't physicians, if you're interested in that, we have a PAC, and we also have a web action alert system that goes out to our members on a variety of issues. We also worked on issues that aren't necessarily legislative. CAMEL, once again, is up to it. They're light and luscious. They are targeting women. They're taking up Philip Morris's banner on this. that women are a great target, and we partnered with the American Legacy Foundation and signed a letter to the chairman of RJR. But look at some of the other issues that we have covered are certainly clean indoor air, FDA, and here is a sample of a letter to the editor that Dr. Davis had sent to the Tribune urging the Illinois General Assembly to look at smoke-free issues. We did this again in Michigan. Right now we're looking at the S-CHIP bill, which is a state insurance program for children, and it was to be funded by the cigarette tax, and the president vetoed that, and the legislature came back with a compromise, and we're waiting for him to veto that as well. AMA spoke out on that. This is some of the media that was covered on our position on that. And I close with that a lot of the AMA is about adults quitting. The AMA is about advocating for better cessation, for reimbursement of these issues, but they're also also interested in what happens with children. This was an ad we ran about the S-CHIP, and to segue into children's health, I'm going to turn it over to Melissa to talk about the Screen Out program.
My name is Melissa Walters, and I'm the project coordinator for a three-year grant that we have called Screen Out, and this grant is through the Legacy Foundation. And this campaign is largely aimed at getting smoking imagery out of youth-rated films. Again, this is a three-year grant-funded program. Screen Out activities organize AMA Alliance members, which are the largest grassroots volunteer arm of the American Medical Association that represent the family of medicine. Our activities create a parent-to-parent network, an adult network of grassroots national volunteers, and what we're doing is organizing around 22,000 members to pressure Hollywood to make all future movies rated G, PG, and PG-13 absolutely smoke-free. So essentially what that means is that smoking, just like language, would be rated R in movies. We use letter writing, petition drives, organizational endorsements, and media to encourage change in the film industry. I'm just going to give you a little background on this because this is an evidence-based campaign. There's been lots of research coming out of UCSF and Dartmouth that shows I'll just give you a little bit of analysis on this. The top 50 grossing movies from May 2003 to April 2004 found that 58% of PG-rated movies and 68% of PG-13-rated movies depicted smoking. So those are movies that youth are seeing. Exposure is that children with the highest exposure to smoking in movies are nearly three times more likely to start smoking than those with the least exposure. In 2001, young teens, which are aged 12 to 14, were more likely to report having seen smoking on television and in movies than were young adults aged 18 to 24. Awareness is that children and adolescents report high levels of awareness of smoking on screen. About 78% of middle school students and 87% of high school students report having seen smoking in movies. And the Centers for Disease Control named tobacco imagery in movies as a major factor in initiating teen smoking. This I find very fascinating. In 1999, it was, as you one might suspect, R-rated movies delivered the most smoking impressions to audiences, approximately 55% in 1999. But as you can see, 5 years later, with fewer R-rated movies being made, youth-rated movies are delivering the most tobacco impressions to theater audiences. In 2005, G and PG movies delivered more than twice as many estimated tobacco impressions, 350 million in theaters alone, than they did in 1999. PG-13 movies delivered 2.4 billion tobacco impressions, almost one-third more than in 1999. Although R-rated movies delivered one-third fewer tobacco impressions. So here are the four solutions that we have that we're endorsing to the Motion Picture Association of America and the six largest movie studios. Rate new movies with smoking R. This is just a basic, simple solution. any film that shows or implies tobacco should be rated R. The only exceptions should be when the presentation of tobacco clearly and unambiguously reflects the dangers and consequences of tobacco use or is necessary to represent the smoking of a real historical figure. We want them to certify that there's no payoffs, meaning that we should certify that no one involved in the motion picture benefits in any way from having tobacco in the film. Require strong anti-smoking ads, basically showing that ads before any movie with tobacco effectively interrupts the fantasy of movies and makes audiences think critically about the promotion of tobacco use on screen. And then to stop identifying tobacco brands in movies. So all of these amazing organizations endorse the four solutions. Unfortunately, the American Public Health Association does not endorse these four solutions yet. We've been working with them and hoping that they will very soon. We were hoping that they were going to this conference, but we've been told maybe they will reassess endorsing this again in, I think it's April. So any of you, if you know people in the APHA, you can contact me to get any evidence that they might feel that they need, because I think this is a very pressing public health issue that APHA should support. Here's just some quick pictures of some of our members out in the field. We have members that are represented in 31 states, close to 22,000 members going around and doing petition drives, largely targeting areas where there are children, parents, PTAs. Here's some of our members at fall festivals at their local zoos in Iowa and Tennessee. They've done a wonderful job in doing this, and also have gained media outreach in six different states, getting op-ed pieces published about this issue. These are just the six largest media studios, including the Motion Picture Association of America. And I'm going to try to zip through this because I know I'm fine on time. We target the Motion Picture Association of America, but we also very much target the six largest studios, because as many people know, they do work in conjunction with each other. So we have our members writing letters and signing petitions that go to each of these places and are pressuring them to let them know how many people are organized around this issue. We also target theater companies, because theater companies buy the rights to show movies. And as a local, in a local environment, you know, we want our members going to theater companies and saying, I don't want to come to your theater if you're showing movies, youth-rated movies that have smoking in them. So we have members who are targeting theater owners in their areas and theater companies. So the reason I gave this is because we're targeting at various levels. We're not just going to the Motion Picture Association of America, because all of these people work in conjunction with each other to decide what our youth are seeing in films. As much as the Motion Picture Association represents the safety of what we as consumers are supposed to be seeing in our movies, they're very tied to the six major studios. So we want to pressure all three levels in trying to get them to effectively make change. We realize that just pressuring one isn't going to do that. Here's some of the media outreach that we've put out. We've placed some coalition ads in Variety magazine, and we were also in Life magazine talking about this issue. I'm sure some of you have heard about it in the news with some of the recent non-policy policies that the studios have come out with. And we have lots of information. Smoke-free movies at UCSF has lots of information actually taking apart the policies that the media companies have come out with, which is great. So as public health leaders, what I wanted to end with, what you can do to get involved in this campaign. We're always looking, obviously, I have a petition up here that I'll pass around after this, to sign a petition, because what we're trying to organize is over 750,000 signatures nationwide to show the MPAA that this is an issue that we care about and that we're not going to stand for this anymore. We also have a grassroots national network of organizations who are working on this issue. And if this is something you're interested in, having your organization endorse the four solutions is also another way to show the MPAA and the six major studios that public health advocates care about this issue and they're organized on this issue. It's very simple. All we need is for your organization to sign a letter that says, yes, we believe these four solutions are the proper way to get smoking out of youth-rated films. And then the other thing is just to tell others about this campaign. We, as organizing in this coalition, feel that we're very close to pushing the media and film industry to take action on this, and the more people we can gather around it, the better. And so with that, I would just like to thank you and encourage you to contact either Janet or myself about any issues of tobacco control at the AMA and the AMA Alliance. And at that point, I will turn it over to Italo.